just heard a piece called Four Little Pieces for Quarter Tone Piano by Tui St. George Tucker, and the pianist there is Bruno Tran Balok. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and we are doing a very special episode of the show today. I'm kind of taking the idea from our recent show called Relevant Tones Overlooked No More, in which we paid homage to the series that the New York Times is doing, where they are writing obituaries for people who didn't originally get one. So normally on Relevant Tones, we feature music by living composers, but in this case, we're going back and memorializing somebody who probably didn't get quite as much attention as she deserved. And so we're really happy to feature a lot of her music on the program today. And that is Tui St. George Tucker. And I have two special guests, both of whom knew her. They are Roger Trefus and Robert Irgrau. Welcome, guys. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Seth. Great to be here.
All right. Let's talk about those pieces that we just heard. The four, I mean, quarter tone is pretty, you know, standard now. Was that unusual at the time? Talk about those pieces a little bit for me.
It was very unusual. These, I think, Robert can correct me if I'm wrong, were probably her first quarter, among her first quarter tone pieces.
Yes.
She moved, Robert can tell me when, but when she moved, she lived on Barrow Street, and her partner, Vera Lachman, had had a heart attack and couldn't climb three flights of stairs. So then they moved to another apartment in the West Village, and Vera had her apartment on the ground floor, and Tui had an apartment in the basement with a garden.
Yes.
And she bought two, this was pre-synthesizer time. She bought two upright pianos and with great, great difficulty got them hoisted into her basement apartment, put them catty corner, you know, and so that you could sit and play one with one hand and one with the other. And she had them tuned in quarter tones.
Yes. And she had that little plank of wood so you could play both of the dampers at once.
Yes.
This is it's a little touch and go at times, but it sort of did the trick. And a circular piano stool so you could swivel around a little bit.
And these pieces, I'm almost sure, were written to be able to be played on those two pianos. And as you hear, they have this extraordinarily special quality. Doesn't sound like anyone else's music, nor does it sound like an essay in quarter tones. It sounds like a piece of music in which Tui's heart was following what she felt about where quarter tones could connect with her own music.
I think that's always interesting because, you know, you don't want that to be a gimmick, you know, that you're using quarter tones that, you know, the first time I heard it was in a Charles Ives piece where he was trying to imitate church bells. And so there was a very particular reason to use the quarter tones because that's kind of what church bells sound like. And so I think that's very important for any composer, you know, that that you have a sound world in mind and quarter tones are part of that sound world.
And we can talk, you know, when we listen to more of her quarter tone music, we can talk more about the way she used quarter tones, but it always is from the heart. So her music is always combining and incorporating, even if it's an extraordinarily wide range of tropes, which we'll explore, it's always connected. I guess since probably a lot of our listeners haven't heard of Tui at all, we should probably start from the beginning. She was born in 1924 in California, died in 2004 in North Carolina. Robert, did she study composition anywhere? Do you know?
Well, she did study in Los Angeles as a college student. She would talk about going to some of Schoenberg's lectures.
Really? Whoa!
And that they were extremely meaningful and of great interest to her. She also she was quite serious about the violin early on and wanted to be a virtuoso. But sort of moved on when she got more interested in composition. She talked about listening to Klemperer conduct the Los Angeles Philharmonic as an extremely meaningful musical influence at the time. And she was very, I think the Los Angeles growing up there was very important to her. She spent a great deal of time outside and her mother had a place in the desert, so they would spend time there.
When did she start with recorder, Robert? Also in California?
You know, I don't know exactly. I think that was one of the things. Well, when she sort of set aside the violin, she wanted to learn an instrument that she could still, you know, enjoy performing. And I think the recorder at one point came along and grabbed her. And but I think it was more of a New York thing, Roger. I'm not really sure.
Because Tui was a virtuoso recorder player and very well known in recorder circles in New York, and played Baroque recorder music with many, many people, and wrote a lot for recorder, as we'll see. She moved to New York, I believe in 1946 was the year that she moved to New York, and she moved immediately to the West Village. And so she was really one of the quintessential West Village composers. And actually Seth honored her on one of his earlier programs about West Village composers, but she was immediately drawn into the circle of that time. John Cage, Jackson McCloe, Lamont Young, she knew Moondog, the strange homeless composer who wore horns. Those of you who don't know can look him up. Robert thinks she actually made a recording with Moondog. I didn't know that. If we can find it, we will. She also got Andy Warhol's cat pregnant. Is that true, Robert? You tell me that?
Well, that's what she said. She said that before Warhol was famous, they lived in some kind of connected row houses in the village with the backyards kind of accessible. And somehow her cat, a virile tomcat, inevitably impregnated Auntie Warhol's cat. She was somehow quite proud of the fact. And we'll never be able to prove it, of course.
I'm sure it had a huge influence on Warhol's development as an artist. Although I would say meeting Tui certainly would, because it would have had an influence on anybody. It certainly did on me, and I'm sure, and I know it did on you, Robert.
Yes. So we met her when we were kids, right, Roger?
Yes, both of us did. Let's go on to, I wanted to start with one of her recorder music is very, very strongly a part of what she does. And I wanted to start, first of all, with an early recorder piece that does not include 12 tones. This is a piece based on a story by the iconic, also not very well known, West Village story writer Spencer Holst, who was part of the circle around Allen Ginsberg and Jackson McCloe and that whole circle. And Spencer wrote a story called Bullfinch and Goblin. And Ralph Zeitlin, amazing, wonderful recorder player of that time, commissioned a solo recorder piece from Tui. And Spencer Holst, who was very close with Tui, suggested that she write a piece inspired by a sentence in that story, how he sang. And this is not a 12-tone piece. I'm sorry, this is not a quarter-tone recorder piece, but it is certainly an example of Tui's recorder music at its height, and played very beautifully by Ralph Zeitlin. Thank you. The recorder piece that I wanted to, that I thought we could might play next is her second sonata for solo recorder, subtitled The Hypertonic. And this has, as you'll hear, a very continuous use of quarter tones, but really always just part of an ongoing melodic exploration. I think this is a great example of what Robert was talking about before, that when she used quarter tones, she was using them the way she would also use a diminished seventh chord. It was just what she felt the music required at that point. I can just tell you what I saw in their liner notes.
Yeah, go ahead, Roger.
And I think they're your liner notes, actually. So Tui felt this wasn't a tonal piece, but it wasn't an atonal piece either. It somehow explored some kind of a world beyond classic tonality, but not going into atonality the way that, let's say, Schoenberg did in his early atonal pieces. I don't really think it matters. It's just because that's the title. This is Tui herself playing, so this is an example of her extraordinary recorder playing.
Thank you.
Let's move on now. Can we talk about...
Yes.
We're moving into the piano music now.
Yes, I wanted to move into the piano music, which other than, Robert may correct me, but other than the little pieces, I don't know too many other pieces for quarter tone piano. What Tui did write is some extraordinary music for conventional piano, some of which is simply very beautiful, mainly tonal. And one of these is her series called Notes from the Blue Mountains. In North Carolina, where Camp Catawba is and where Tui spent every summer from 1947 and also lived full-time at the end of her life, that's the Blue Mountains are there. They're low mountains surrounding the camp. You could see them from the front porch of the main house there. And in certain lights, they are literally blue. And she wrote a series of four piano pieces called Notes from the Blue Mountains. And she wrote them for Greta Sultan, the Berlin-born pianist who was also very closely involved with John Cage and whom she met through Vera Lachman and knew very well. And so let's listen to the one of the pieces from Notes from the Blue Mountains. It's called On a Mountain Road at Summer's End. Thank you.
Great. Let's talk about the second piano sonata.
Yes. The second piano sonata is subtitled the Peyote Sonata. And I wish I had, I studied this piece. It was also written for Greta. I studied it with Greta in that very apartment that Robert was talking about, played it for Tui. And we talked a lot about it, but I never talked to her literally about how it connected to Peyote. There's no question. clearly Tui had taken Peyote as everybody did at those times. And there's a kind of a flow and a kind of a mix of things that happen in this piece, including, for example, one passage of 15 against 16, 15 notes in the right hand, 16 in the left. It is literally impossible to do, but maybe on Peyote you could do it. Thank you. I wanted to play the Ave Verum, which is a very short piece. It's a very simple, gorgeous setting of the text by Thomas Aquinas. I wanted to play it right after the Peyote Sonata to show that Tully, writing in a very straightforward tonal style, also wrote things that were not only beautiful, but unlike anything I think anyone else would have written.
Okay, Herzliebst der Jesu.
Yeah, I wanted to, this is a piece that she wrote for the wonderful organist Paul Jordan, late organist Paul Jordan, who also was in Catawba, was he not, Robert?
Oh yes, he was another Catawba boy before our time, Roger.
Yes, he was there right at the beginning almost, and so he knew Tully. Anyway, he wrote this, this is a set of variations on Herzliebst der Jesu, which is a piece by a not very well-known Baroque composer. And it's a set of variations. And I thought this was interesting because I really see this variational structure as coming partly out of her respect for Schoenberg and the way that he used the variation form so often.
Well, unfortunately, that is all the time that we have to feature the music of Tui St. George Tucker on the program today. But as you heard, she is a highly original voice, and there are videos on YouTube. Quite a few of her pieces are up on YouTube, so I highly recommend checking them out. Definitely a composer who deserves to be better known. And thanks so much to my guests on the program today, Roger Trefus and Robert Juergrau, both of whom knew Tui St. George Tucker. So what a treat to be able to talk with both of them and hear the stories, so many great stories about this wonderful composer. Relevant Tones is a product of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of bringing musical creativity to life every day. Find out more at acmusic.org. For Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.